So that's Ecclesiastes chapter 1, starting at verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes round to the north. Round and round goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, "See, this is new"? It has been already in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of men to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted.
Thanks, Danny. I wonder, how was your Christmas? It's the most wonderful time of the year, goes the song. Yeah, I'm sure in a room like this, there'll be a whole range of experiences. Joyful, hopeful, sad. But I think our passage today, the passage that Danny's just read, will help us see something that is in common to all of our Christmases. I'll call it a hollowness for now. See what you think, I'll describe it. Perhaps your Christmas was all COVID and cancelled plans. Apparently, there were about a million people in isolation on Christmas Day in the UK. Hope and I were two of them. We've been really looking forward to time with family. And let's just say that houseplants in party hats aren't really a substitute. They felt a bit hollow. Clearly, our Christmas wasn't it. It wasn't what we'd been hoping for. Or perhaps your plans went ahead, and there was family and turkey and presents. But maybe you felt the hollowness too. The Christmas dinner is just food when all's said and done. The presents are just things. The people will leave. Christmas was meant to be the light at the end of the tunnel. But once you're there, it's just not it. Or perhaps your Christmas was a genuinely bright spot at the end of a really dark year. But now, it's over. It's January 2nd. You remember the joy, but life moves on. Do you really have anything to show for it? Is there really any difference between thinking back to your joyful Christmas and thinking back on a happy dream or a book that you once read? There is something wrong with the world. There is something wrong with life. Maybe you've just felt it at the edges of your experience. Maybe you felt it really keenly. My hope today is that Ecclesiastes will help us be honest about that problem. It's written by a Jewish king who calls himself the preacher. He's felt that same problem that we might have felt, and he's investigated it. He's felt around the edges of the problem, and he calls it hevel. That's the word that we see translated vanity in verse 2. Hevel, it means vapor or breath. Now, this clearly isn't mine, but it looks a little bit like this. Vapor, breath. There is something about life that slips through our fingers. And trying to grab hold of it is like trying to catch breath or vapor. You just can't do it. It's not an idea you can sum up in a sentence, but the preacher has given us a book. Ecclesiastes is filled with images and poetry and reflections to help us get our heads around, to help us see the problem of Hevel. And God's given it to us so that we can face reality. He wants us to go into 2022 with our eyes wide open, resolving to be honest about what the world is actually like. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's start by thinking about what the world is like. Let's start by looking at some of those images in verses 1 to 11. I think the first thing that we see is that we live in a world without gain. First point, verses 1 to 11. We live in a world without gain. Look down with me at verse 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. What does a man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Nothing. That's the answer the preacher is implying. Nothing. We live in a world without gain. That's the root of Hevel, of that vanity that the preacher's talking about. When I say gain, I mean that we long to have something that lasts. We long to have something that's permanent. We want to finish work and at the end of the day, have something to show for it. We want to gain something. I looked at the websites of a few of the skyscrapers around us. You might have seen them as you walked in. They all claim to be something like iconic or striking or instantly recognizable. The architects were there, sitting there at their drawing tables, trying to make their mark on the world. Or in other words, they were trying to make something that lasted, something that they could always point to and say, that one there, that's me. They wanted gain. Or maybe closer to home. We want the dishes to be done, and we want them to stay done so we can get on with our lives. That's gain. We want gain. We want the Christmas presents to make us happy and to keep us happy forever. That's gain. We want gain. But we live in a world without gain. We live in a world where trying to get something lasting, something fixed, something permanent, is like trying to catch mist. It's like trying to catch breath. Verse 4. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. It's really hard to hear, but we are temporary. And the things that we make, they're temporary too. Think of the architects. One day, their buildings will be rubble again. The city will forget the shard, the gherkin, the walkie-talkie, and the men that made them. The world will keep turning, the Thames will keep flowing, and it will be like they never were here at all. We live in a world without gain. Or how about the image in verse 5? Helps us see the problem. The sun rises and the sun goes down, and it hastens to the place where it rises. How can there be gain when life works in cycles? We empty the washing basket and it's full again, almost immediately. We get into a routine and another lockdown comes. We get back in touch with that friend. Then suddenly something comes up and we haven't talked in weeks. Around and around, again and again, never really getting anywhere. Things don't stay finished. They don't last, just like the sun doesn't stay set at the end of the day. We live in a world without gain. And even when we do get the things that we want, the preacher says, there's no gain there either. Listen to the image in verse 7. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the places where the streams flow, there they flow again. all things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear with hearing. We look for gain in satisfaction, in filling. We want something that will make us happy forever, that will fill us up. But we live in a world without gain. Just like the Thames never fills the North Sea, the things that we buy, the things that we eat, the things that we watch, they never fill us up. I love books. If you're ever looking to buy me a present, by the way, a book is the perfect one. You can never go wrong with it. And I had a really happy time over Christmas, or maybe in the new year, opening book-shaped presents. But when I put them on my shelf, I began to think about the next one that I wanted. And that, more than anything else, made me really sad. We plan the dream holiday, but we come away from it thinking about what would make the next holiday better. We want the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next, because nothing satisfies and nothing lasts. There really is no gain. All things are full of weariness, the preacher says. Surely we felt that. The relentless chase after satisfaction makes us weary. It makes us weary because when you look close enough, all the stuff that we chase, all the presents that we open, it's just more of the same. Look at verse 9. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. The new coat that we buy, if we're honest, is it really that different to the last one? I recently bought a tablet with a little pencil that I can use to make notes on electronically. I was quite excited, but then my wife pointed out that it's basically an expensive glow-in-the-dark pad of paper. As hard as it was for me to hear, it's not really new. It's not going to change my life. And if nothing's really new, then trying to gain satisfaction by filling ourselves with more and more new things, it's like trying to complete a jigsaw puzzle by going on eBay and ordering lots of copies of the pieces that you already have. And because nothing's new, nothing really makes a mark on the world. Verse 11. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. Unfortunately, the project that we're working on won't change the world. At the end of the day, our lives will be a photo in a box, or on a wall maybe, or a footnote in a census somewhere. And that brings us right back round to the image that we started with at the very beginning. Nothing really lasts. Lots of this is quite hard to hear. We might be surprised that the Bible speaks quite so bluntly about this. But all of these different images, they're meant to help us see reality. This isn't just pandemic life the preacher is describing. He's describing normal life too. All is vanity, hevel, vapor. We can't grab hold of it. The things we make break. The people whose lives we change die. And nothing satisfies. But the preacher's not done, you'll be pleased to hear. Probably our first instinct hearing all of this is to think of solutions or loopholes to this problem that he's described. But the preacher doesn't want us going there. He wants us to know that we can't fix the problem. So first, we live in a world without gain. And second, we can't fix it. That's verses 12 to 15. We can't fix it. We aren't used to unsolvable problems. When COVID came along, I think we all knew deep down that there'd be a vaccine someday. Every time we step on the tube or scroll through Instagram, we see people trying to sell us solutions to hunger, to boredom, to loneliness. And all of those solutions out there mean that when we see a problem that we can't solve, we think that it's because we don't have the resources. We don't have enough money, we don't have enough time. We think that we can't solve problems because we can't afford the things that will make us truly happy. And we don't have time to figure out how to solve it, figure out an alternative to the frustrating way our lives work. But the preacher wants to close down any thoughts that we have of fixing this problem. Look at verse 12. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. Imagine it. Imagine having basically unlimited wealth, unlimited free time, unlimited power, with no one telling you how to use it. Imagine the things that you could see, the things that you could buy, the things that you could do. The king had that, the preacher had that, and he's put all of his resources, all of his effort, towards examining the world and trying to find something, anything that gives true gain. Something that lasts, something that's new, something that isn't touched by hevel, by vanity. You can read on in Ecclesiastes to hear about that search, but here's a little sample. He goes to school, but the more he knows, the sadder that he sees the world is. He leaves the 9 to 5 and commits his energy to passion projects. He searches after his heart's desires. Doesn't that sound attractive? But in the end, he has nothing to show for it. The high ends, the friends grow old, the palaces crumble, and nothing lasts. He's seen it all, and you can really hear the sadness in his voice as he writes. Let me read from verse 13. It is an unhappy business that God has given the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. The king, for all his power and his wealth and his time, he can't fix it. What hope do we have? He searched out everything under the sun. And if the preacher's right, this is life everywhere. He searched out everything under the sun. This is truth in 900 BC Jerusalem or in 2022 London. There is no happy corner of the world or of the internet that you can go to escape this reality of hevel. Nothing that Amazon or Elon Musk or Country Living, nothing that they sell you will solve it. We can't fix it. And we can't fix it because God has put it that way. Did you hear God mentioned in verse 13? It's an unhappy business that God has given us to be busy with. Now, the preacher's not talking about the way that God made the world. He's not accusing God of being a poor workman. That's all Genesis 1, Eden, the world as it was meant to be. Genesis 1 tells us that God gave the people that he made everything. He gave them life, a beautiful home, satisfying and productive work. It was good. That's the world that we dream of. No, the preacher is referring to Genesis 3. That's what we read earlier, as we heard read earlier. We heard God responding to the first man rejecting him and choosing his own way. We heard Adam and Eve rejected their loving creator, and we heard God responding with right judgment. We heard God curse the gifts that he gave them. And that's what we're feeling the consequences of today. We live in a cursed world that bears the scars of human sin. We feel that curse as hevel. It is like God has made the world crooked. In right judgment, he has put a gap between work and gain. We toil, and we know deep down that when we toil, we should have something to show for it. But we don't. We work and we have nothing to show for it. We know that we should be satisfied when we get new things, but nothing satisfies. Nothing lasts. And we die. We were made for a far better world than this. Of course, this cursed world feels wrong. But regardless of how we got here, what matters is that we can't fix the cursed world from the inside. You can't unlock a cell from the inside. That's the point. We can't invent or buy our way back into Genesis 1. Promotion, marriage, or my personal favorite, getting a dishwasher, none of them will make the world anything less like the preacher describes. Whatever we might suggest, the preacher has already tried it. Verse 15 again. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. We can't set it straight. We can't even measure the problem. It's beyond our grasp. So what do we do? I guess we could put our fingers in our ears and pretend that this isn't what the world is like. I think Christians are especially good at this, by the way. We can sometimes give the impression that becoming a Christian removes all sadness from the world, all pain. But the preacher doesn't want us forcing a smile, I don't think. Or I suppose we could get angry at God. But the preacher doesn't actually go there either. No, I think the reason that the preacher is telling us all of this, the reason that he's describing the world that we live in such bleak tones, is that God wants us to see what the world is really like. Because God knows that if we live a lie and we pretend that we can find gain and satisfaction here, we're only going to get hurt looking for it. We're going to spend our life chasing after wind that we just can't catch. I won't do that again. And we will be disappointed. Some people like New Year's resolutions. So how about one for this year? We live in a world without gain, and we can't fix it. So let's resolve to be honest in 2022. Let's resolve to be honest in 2022. Let's be honest with ourselves. What are we expecting 2022 to be like? Do we expect anything like the world that the preacher describes? A world of cycles, frustration, weariness, things slipping through our fingers. You see, the danger of coming out of a few undeniably bad years is that we forget that normal life is cursed too. Perhaps we want this year to make up for spoiled years. New year, new me, maybe. Or maybe we think we've learnt the lessons of the pandemic and we can make big changes that will just sort out our life. But we need to be honest with ourselves. We still live in a cursed world without gain. Let me give a few examples. Maybe we loved working from home. Will doing that more this year solve the frustrations of work? Will it make the work that we do any more lasting? No. Maybe isolation made us realize that we hate being single, or we hate living in zone two. Will getting married or moving house satisfy our loneliness or our sadness? Not really. If the pandemic made us bored with everything that we own, will this New Year's films satisfy us? No. Or if the pandemic made us scared for our lives, for our livelihood, will more savings or insurance or paying off the mortgage really make us more secure? Not really. Let's be honest with ourselves. If those are our 2022 expectations, we will be disappointed. If we're grasping after gain, permanence, security, we won't find it. If we're seeking after something new, we won't find it. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. We don't live in Eden. We're not God. We can't fix the curse. We're human beings, in fact, fragile, weak, and wasting away. Now, I hope you don't think that all of this is nihilism or pessimism or any other ism. How we live really matters. Ecclesiastes finishes with the preacher saying, "Fear God and keep his commandments." If you read on, he shows how the good life in this world means following God and enjoying his good gifts. If you're a Christian, it means living the Christian life. Yes, we can't make something lasting, but there is a God who is everlasting, who gives real gifts and real joy even in a cursed world. It's a bit complicated to explain, but the alternative to seeking after gain is to accept our mortality and to take joy in God's good gifts to us. But we can't do that. We can't move on to accepting it and thinking about how we can take joy in God's gifts without being honest about how the world actually is. 2022 is going to look a lot like Ecclesiastes 1. Let's be honest with ourselves. And let's be honest with each other, too. It's a bit of a trope that when a British person asks you how you're doing, the only correct answer, whatever your day's been like, is fine, how are you? But Ecclesiastes should give us permission to not be fine. The world is cursed, frustrated, frustrating. It's okay to not be okay. Obviously, we don't have to tell everyone everything. Obviously, we shouldn't moan. A church isn't some sort of pity party. But if we pretend that everything is fine all the time, we're going to miss out the real gift that we have of church family encouraging us, helping us to apply what we hear from the Bible week by week. Food at Fives, our food afterwards, could be a chance for us to help each other live for Jesus in a cursed world. It's an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with, says the preacher. So let's be honest with each other too. And finally, let's be honest about our longings. We've spent lots of time today with our heads down, thinking about the world as it is. I'd like to close by lifting our eyes to look at the world as it will be. Because in Ecclesiastes, the preacher doesn't claim to solve the problem of the world that he describes. Even if we stop trying to live for gain, even if we're honest about the world and accept that if we're looking for permanence, we will not find it, we will still be living in a cursed and broken world. And that should leave us longing. I hope that we've seen that these longings won't be met in the next thing, the next weekend, the next holiday, next Christmas, next job, next house, next life stage, whatever next you want. But the preacher doesn't want us to stop longing. He just wants us longing for the right things. Our longings will only be met, you see, when Jesus returns. Jesus is coming back to make this world right for everyone who trusts in him. For everyone who trusts in him, there will be no more curse, no more weariness, and no more striving after wind. Ecclesiastes points to our weariness and helps us to admit our longings. It helps us to be honest. So it's only right that we finish by lifting our eyes to the only place that these longings will be truly met. So in that vein, I'm going to close by reading a part of the prophet Isaiah's description of what the new creation that Jesus will bring, what that will be like. So maybe close your eyes. I don't know. I'm going to read. For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former things shall not be remembered or come into mind. I will rejoice in Jerusalem and be glad in my people. No more shall be heard in it the sound of weeping and the cry of distress. They shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For like the days of a tree shall the days of my people be. And my chosen shall long enjoy the work of their hands. They shall not labor in vain. Let me pray. Father, thank you for Ecclesiastes and the way that it helps us see what life is really like. Please help us as we go into 2022 to be honest about the fact that we won't find satisfaction, we won't find permanence outside of you. Please keep us from grasping after things that will just slip through our fingers. And please help us to long more and more for Jesus' return. Amen.